Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, the outstanding Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. It is Monday, December 11th, 2023, 6 now past the hour of 1 o'clock. Welcome into hour number 2 of the big show. Glad to have you along with us. Before we move on, a big shout out. I was remiss at the top of the show, Mr. Zommers. A big shout out to Badger Women's Volleyball on their way to the Final Four, as reported there over the break. We watched the game with family over the weekend up in Shawano, and holy macaroni. Well, those women are freaking talented.
And I bet Terry Bell is very excited.
I believe he was running around the office. I heard him say earlier, set, spike, you know, kill. I mean, he's very into it.
He does love the UW basketball. Basketball. That too, probably, but the volleyball.
No, Terry has season tickets to the volleyball, and they did a great job. So now the Wisconsin Badgers face Texas in the Final Four in Tampa on Thursday. So looking forward to that. And then if they win there, they would face either Pitt or their conference foe, the evil Nebraska Cornhuskers, who, of course, beat the Badgers once this year. A rematch. And of course, Wisconsin beat Nebraska for the national championship 2 years ago.
So it's a repeat.
It's an ongoing grudge between those evil Cornhuskers and the Wisconsin Badgers. But congratulations to Kelly Sheffield, the coach, and the entire Lady Badger volleyball team doing a great job and into the Final Four this week. Also, as we said at the top of the show, happy Hanukkah to all of our friends of the Jewish faith who are celebrating this week. We have our menorah finally on the table behind us here, and we stand in solidarity and wish all the good blessings, the wonderful things of the year ahead for all those folks celebrating Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights. And who can't use more light in this day and age, particularly when it gets dark so early? So you have light, both literally and physically, or literally and metaphorically. What am I trying to say? Anyway, you get it.
Yeah, literally and metaphorically.
That's it. Thank you. I talk for a living, in case you didn't know that. We are going to talk a little bit more at the bottom of the hour with our friend Pete Swaba, who is the host of a brand new late night program called Nightlight. Runs from 8 until 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network. I had the honor of being on the show last week. We're going to return the favor. Pete Swaba, host of Nightlight, is going to be on our program at the bottom of the hour here at 1:30. Looking forward to that conversation with Pete. Right now, I want to finish up this conversation we have had over the first hour of the debacle that is the University of Wisconsin system. And this deal that broke down over the weekend between Jay Rothman, president of the system, and Robin Voss, Republican speaker of the legislature. Quickly to set it up again, 4% pay raises for approximately 35,000 UW system employees was approved by the Republican legislature in the budget process and signed into law by Tony Evers. A subcommittee, the Joint Committee on Employment Relations, better known as JOKER, co-chaired by Robin Voss, their attorneys told them that they had the constitutional authority to withhold those raises, or I guess a better way to put it was to wait on executing those pay raises, and Robin Voss said he wouldn't let those pay raises take effect until UW system got rid of their diversity, equity, and inclusion program. Governor Evers has filed a lawsuit saying that that's bogus. I agree with the governor. And I think it's ridiculous that Voss tried to hold this up after it was already approved. It's going to take a while to work through with the courts, probably. We don't know. So in the meantime, Jay Rothman, president of the system, decided to go into secret negotiations with Robin Voss to appease him. And he was willing to put those pay raises on the table that were already approved. I think that was mistake number one. But regardless, he did get quite a bit for UW system in the deal, including a new engineering building on campus at Madison. And there's the guarantee in the top 5% of high school students get into Madison. The top 10% get into other four-year institutions. Reciprocity with Michigan, or pardon me, with Minnesota. There was a lot to like in this deal if you're a UW System employee. Oh, and by the way, before I forget, I was remiss, Mr. Zomer, had so much to talk about there at the top of the show. If you're listening to us in Madison on WMDX, there is a water main break, speaking of campus, near Camp Randall on Regent Street. And that is not expected to be completely cleaned up by the evening commute. So if you're listening to us on Madison, then avoid the Regent Street area with Monroe Street near Camp Randall. That is going to be a mess for a while. A water main break. Terry Bell, Nate Wakehell, and our news team will keep you up to speed on that. But avoid Regent Street at Camp Randall right now if you live in Madison. So Jay Rothman decides to negotiate with Robin Voss. And here's the deal. So here's what the deal essentially, not essentially, the deal was that rather than cutting all of diversity, equity, and inclusion, Robin Voss said basically, okay, I can live with a third of the cut. A third. And in exchange for, and also the people that were going to be, they called it reimagining these DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion positions. All right. And so they were going to keep diversity, equity, inclusion, except for these 40-some positions that were going to be cut or reimagined. And so this is part of the negotiation for what all the buildings, the money, and the pay raises that UW got. It's not necessarily a deal I would have made, but the point is that Rothman made the deal with Voss. And then he goes to the Board of Regents the next day. He could have waited until this week and done some lobbying over the weekend, or lined, we call it in politics, keeping your ducks in a row. But Rothman didn't do that. He went right, almost 24 hours later, to the Board of Regents. And the Regents, in a surprise move, voted it down. Largely because many of the Democratic, progressive, liberal elements of the political machine in Wisconsin, particularly in Madison area, started lobbying their constituencies, saying, write letters, you know, get online, you know, let them know this is not okay. And let me try to find one of these things here real quickly, because I was following this, as I said, all weekend long. There was one professor or one person in particular that really gin things up over the weekend. Here it is, an alert. It says, tell the UW Board of Regents to reject the GOP's deal to cut DEI at our universities. Sign on to our letter to tell them that DEI initiatives and positions are not a bargaining chip. This from Dr. Sammy Shulk, an activist, but also a professor, I believe, at UW-Madison. So people were ginned up. The Board of Regents said, oh my gosh, we can't have all these people upset at us. And so they voted it down 9-8. And before, or in the first hour rather, I kind of laid out these three positions very quickly. The Tom Loftus, former Speaker of the Assembly and ambassador, and some of the regions said, no, we voted this down because we don't want to set precedent. All right. That it's empowering people like Voss in the future, and it negates the budget process. Then you have the Democrats' kind of political stance and progressives and liberals saying, this is a win for us. We stood up to Voss, to hate, to the GOP. We can't let minorities be rolled over anymore. And now we have Voss where we want him at the table. Well, here's how the Republicans and the MAGA folks spun it over the weekend. Look, they said, Voss went from cutting all of the DEI positions to only a third. They didn't fire anybody. UW System gets all of their money plus what they asked for. They get the new engineering building at Madison. They get the pay raises. They get the reciprocity with Minnesota. They get the 5 and 10% guarantees at Madison and the other 4 years, respectively. But, says the Republicans, look how extreme they are. They're dying on the hill of getting 100% of DEI and their indoctrination. Their words, not mine. That's the spin they're taking. And let me tell you, it is very popular out there, that stance. Don't make any mistake about it.
Oh yeah, I've heard it.
I mean, it's because it's much easier to explain that take than it is all the other things I've spent nearly an hour deciphering, boiling down, and helping you all understand. So what's Todd's take on this? Well, I think that Robin Voss, the Republicans were wrong to do a power grab by a committee, which after spending 30 years in politics, leaving the party in 2011, I've never seen anything like that. All right. I think it was morally wrong. I think it's legally wrong. The courts will decide that part of it. I also think that the deal, while not perfect, for the reasons I just stated, it actually has quite a bit of good in it for the University of Wisconsin system. I also think that unlike in Iowa, where they've gotten rid of diversity, equity, and inclusion, at least this preserved the program. And if you don't understand the way that things work at UW system and in state government, I get it. But when they said they're going to reimagine these 40-some DEI positions, here's what they do. The person gets to keep basically their same office. And you say, well, what do? I help minorities. I help veterans. Well, wait a minute. Wasn't that what you did as a diversity, equity, and inclusion officer? Yes. Well, what's your job title now? Oh, I'm a student life enhancement person. Or whatever else title. They change the nameplate on the door. They change the technical classification, but you essentially do what you were doing before.
The language was pretty loose.
Right. And so do I know for certain what I just said is fact, what they would have done? No, I don't. But do I have enough experience in state government and working with UW system to understand that's probably what they were going to do? Yes. I'll tell you the rest of it on the other side. Because the future is very murky when it comes to higher ed in Wisconsin. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll get it out. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show, along with Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. It's 20 now past the hour of 1 o'clock, December 11th, a Monday. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Pete Swaba will be in, the host of Nightlight on Civic Media, every evening from 8 until 10. Breaking down what this whole deal on the debacle that is UW System's breakdown with a deal with Robin Voss Republicans. I told you kind of the three areas that I see coming out of this, the kind of the Tom Loftus Board of Regents. It sets dangerous precedent. That's why I had to vote it down. The Democrats, progressive liberals saying it comes down to standing up for minorities. Don't roll over minorities, taking on hate, taking on Voss, taking a stand. We won. We have Voss where we got him. The GOP MAGA saying that, look, we essentially gave UW system everything they wanted. And we didn't cut all of the DEI positions the way that we said we would. We only did a third, and we didn't even fire those people so those jobs could be, quote unquote, reimagined. And that by voting down this deal, it shows the extremism of the other side. Their words, not mine. And so before the break, I said, here's my view. Again, I think Voss and the Republicans were 100% wrong in the power grab, just morally, and I think legally. I think they're going to fail, and I think they're going to lose in court. I think Evers will win on the pay raises. The deal isn't perfect, but UW does get a lot. I mean, they get to keep two-thirds of the DEI positions, and they'll be reimagined. Remember, Iowa just got rid of all other DEI positions. Also, I'm a pretty pragmatic person. And in politics, if you could get a third of a loaf, that's pretty good. Sometimes you have to be willing. You know, we have gotten in this realm in American politics where it's all or nothing. And the key is knowing what hill to die on. That's what it comes down to. If you're a legislator or a staff person or Jay Rothman of the Board of Regents, what hill do you want to die on? The hill I died on was voter rights, was the fact that Republicans were stripping away constitutional rights to vote, suppressing the vote. I was willing to die on that hill, and that's why I left the Republican Party. And that's what I think, and I'm going to talk about Democrats in a minute, but before I do, if this doesn't prove that Jay Rothman needs to go, I don't know what does. I mean, the guy is incompetent for not including a person of color or minorities at the table. I mean, how do you negotiate diversity, equity, inclusion and not have a person of color at the table? You can't count votes in your border regions. You must not have included the governor in this. He continues to negotiate in secret on all these things. He's not a leader. Jay Rothman isn't. It has finally caught up to him. No one trusts Jay Rothman anymore. You've broken the deal. And that's where I think Jay Rothman made a huge mistake because, look, I've sat in meetings with Robin Voss. I've been at the bargaining table with Robin Voss vis-a-vis my boss. I know how he negotiates. He doesn't swear. He doesn't yell. He comes in kind of like Eddie Haskell. Okay, this is what we want. What do you want? All right, that's what you want. All right, very good. That's a no. This is a maybe. This is a yes. What can we do? I'm not exaggerating by much. That's the way Robin Voss negotiates. And in politics, once you have done a deal, whether it's a bad or a good deal, once you do a deal, you have to stick to it. I didn't like the deal on Friday. I liked parts of it. But the deal was made. And the fact that Jay Rothman couldn't get it across the line, he has lost all credibility at Regents, all credibility with academic staff, all credibility with the legislature. I don't see how he survives. And finally, let me say this. I'm a little salty about the Democrats. Because for a year, we have been talking on this program when Jay Rothman shut down UW-Richland. Did the region say anything then? No. Other than Kelda Royce, state senator from Madison, and maybe a couple other people.
Katrina Shankland, I believe.
Thank you, Katrina Shankland. But in large part, Democrats said nothing. Tony Evers said nothing. When they shut down the Washington campus, when they shut down Fond du Lac, nothing. 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, when the Daily Cardinal put out that email where Rothman said, we want to target low-income students and take programs away from them, where were these progressives and liberals then? Silent. It's only when it affects something near and dear to them, and then they don't even get it right because they focus on the better-known part of DEI, the racial part, and they don't focus on veterans, they don't focus on the disabled, they don't focus on rural poor kids, and they gin this up. And if Democrats and liberals think that, quote unquote, we've got Robin Voss where we want him, you are dead wrong. So let's be clear. If this is where Democrats want to die on the hill of 100% of what they want on DEI, that's fine. But be honest about that. Be willing to tell people, the 35,000 people that aren't going to get their pay raises, look, you ain't getting them because Robin Voss is a schmuck and he took a power grab. But we also were unwilling to come to the negotiating table in good faith. At least Jay Rothman wasn't. So be honest that that's the hill you're dying on. Be clear about that to your constituents because the people of Wisconsin deserve to have that clarity. I don't know where we go from here. I'll tell you, Robin, and again, Democrats, you know, what leverage do you have to get Voss back and get something else? None. You've got no leverage. So fine, you stood up, you stood your ground, but there's no way to get Voss back to the table on your terms because you don't have anything that he wants. There's nothing that you have on him that he's afraid of. You poisoned the water on this. So anyway, that's what Toddy thinks. We got a couple of minutes. We'll go quickly to Rob in Port Edwards. Rob, we'll give about 30, 40 seconds here to try to get through everybody. Rob, go ahead.
Unless I'm mistaken, this was funding that was already agreed upon and passed as part of the budget.
Yep.
So what the Republicans did basically was take the money and play shell game in order to do a little grandstanding here for their base.
Right.
It's got nothing to do with negotiating with Robin Voss right now. Legally, he should just say, here, take the money. This is what you are owed. Here's your 4%. Mm. It's not a game of let's negotiate after the fact. Geez, do-overs. No, sir. No.
I encourage you to go back and listen to the first part of the show because we talked about all that, Rob. I appreciate the call. Rob Port Edwards. Susan, very quickly, about 30 seconds left. Susan, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I was just going to reiterate what the person just said before me. But the other thing is clearly we have to be honest about we have to be really honest with each other about, you know, our expectations of how this is all going to play out because they're hurting everyone, not just people that work there. They're hurting the whole state of Wisconsin. But
I agree with you, Susan. I wish we had more time. Stay tuned. We have Pete Swaba on the other side. Wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tunnel Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is the having fun doing it part, Mr. Zommers. It is now 34 past the hour of 1 o'clock, Monday, December 11th. Aaron Zommers on the board and joining us this half hour, our friend and colleague from up north a bit, up in the Green Bay area, Pete Swaba, host of the brand new great program every weeknight from 8 until 10 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Nightlight. Jeez, Tal, get it right. Yes, it's right in front of me. Sorry, Pete. Nightlight with Pete Swaba. I have so much late night stuff in my head, sometimes I can't keep it all straight, but you did a fantastic job. You were so kind as to have me on your show last week, and we wanted to return the favor and let our listeners know a little bit about you and about this great new program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I had a blast when you were on my show, Todd. It was really fun, and I hope you come back again soon. But yeah, it's great to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you on anytime. It was a great honor to be on your show. And for people who might not be aware, tell folks, if you would, a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and kind of how did you get into the comedy side of the business?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Chicago, right in the city off the Kennedy Expressway. I moved to Wisconsin when I was in junior high up to the Marinette area. So that's kind of my adopted hometown. And I went back to Chicago for college, did a comedy contest, and then I started doing stand-up after that. And that was kind of my livelihood for about 10 years, traveling around and touring and the occasional TV appearance. It was really fun. And then I moved to LA and got lucky enough to sell some screenplays, only one of which got made, which is puzzling because they pay a lot of money for those things and sometimes they just sit on the shelf. So, right. But I made my own movie called The Godfather of Green Bay with Tony Goldwyn and Lauren Holly and Thomas Lennon and Lance Barber. Shot that up here in Northeast Wisconsin several years ago. And never thought I'd be back here, but, you know, my wife and I, she's from here too, and we have two kids, and we thought, you know, let's go be by family. And so, voila, I've been hosting a show on public television about movies for the last 10 years since I've been back here, and now working for Civic Media and love it. Love talking about show business and what we're watching and streaming and, you know, just some fun Wisconsin stories too. So it's really... So far, I've only had 1 week, but I'm still kind of getting acclimated again to radio, but it's been really fun.
oh, we've been on the air for over a year. We're still getting acclimated. So, I mean, you got plenty of time. You got plenty of time, you understand?
Hey, did I go back far enough? Do you want me to go back to the womb? Because I will. I'll give you my whole life story.
You did great. You did great. It's a fascinating resume. And talk to people, because we've had comics, we have people in comedy on this show fairly regularly. And talk about what it was like getting into stand-up, because that's something I've never done. I think there's a unique skill set to it. Did you start in college, or kind of where do you start, and where did you hone that craft? Because it's unique. It's a unique skill, and I find it just mesmerizing, because I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I guess I used to watch Evening at the Improv. Remember that show? Mm-hmm. It was on A&E.
Yeah.
And I saw, like, between the sets, they would show comics outside on Melrose, outside the club, just talking. And I saw, like, Robin Williams out there talking to people. And I'm like, oh, how fun just to be a comic, yeah, hanging out, you know? And then I realized, oh, you have to write an act to do that. And you have to, you know, just hang out with popular comedians.
Right.
So when I got to college, I did a contest, and I was lucky enough to win it, probably only because I had more people there from my college than Northwestern or Loyola had kids there. But yeah, and then I hit the open mics, and it was a real challenge. You realize, oh, these people are drinking. They don't know me. It was a real, adventure. But it does take, you have to get over that initial fear of public speaking. Once you do that, you get in a groove. But now I still do it periodically. If a friend calls me and wants me to go on the road with them, or I host something, it's a little nerve-wracking. You know, you get the butterflies, and it's not an easy thing to do, but it sure was fun for a guy. You know, I was in my 20s and got to see a lot of America and be on TV. It was a real kick, you know, but yeah, it's not for everybody, I guess.
We talked to Keegan Kelly from cracked.com, and he was talking about, you know, kind of I think he wrote a piece at Cracked kind of talking about this, you know, the political warriors, that a lot of these comics like John Lovitz or Roseanne or others have really gone off kind of on the right-hand side. And then you have, you know, maybe not quite so much, but you have, you know, people like Colbert who just continuously go to the left, and kind of the comics that can get the laugh without going far right or far left are becoming fewer and fewer. What was kind of your shtick on stage? Kind of what was your niche? Shtick isn't a great word, but what was your niche on stage? And what do you think of this kind of polarization of comedy like that?
Boy, that's a great question. I feel like it's almost a crutch. Like, I feel like when you get into comedy, and when I was younger, when I started, I was 21. And I remember reading, like, you know, all these different books about comedy and people saying, like, you should be funny without swearing. Mm-hmm. And then if you swear, okay, but if you're relying on it, that's not good. I feel kind of the same way about the polarization of the political comedians. Some of them are funny on their own, but mm-hmm. some of them just push buttons. And it's like, okay, if that's what the crowd wants, they're certainly entitled to do that. And if they can sell out a comedy club, great. But I was more observational and just found ways, hopefully. I mean, whenever you're on stage, you're trying to connect with people. And the challenge that I thought was fun was when you'd work a rural room where there's 9 people there, mm-hmm. or when you worked a huge club in the city, when you're on TV, whatever, you were trying to connect with that audience regardless of their background. And to me, that was always like I'm kind of a city guy. So I like doing these little one-nighters. My movie, The Godfather of Green Bay, is kind of about that. It's a roadside bar where they do comedy, and man, you don't know what you're going to get. You know, you could get the biker who thinks you're the funniest guy in the world, or the guy who just cashed his check and is drunk and yelling at you. Mm. But I feel like if you can connect with those people, that's what comedy should do, is bring people together and connect us, you know, and that's why we laugh together, we connect. That's was always very important to me.
I couldn't agree more. And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about the arts and entertainment in general, is whether it's a song, or whether it's a comedy sketch or a movie or a painting in a museum, you know, you don't know who people voted for necessarily when you go to any of those things, but you enjoy it as a group. You're in a human setting. And I think since the pandemic, I was talking about this with family over the weekend, we've become more isolated than ever. And to find those things that can bring us together and for at least a moment, forget about whether we're an R or a D, I just think that's healthy for humanity.
You know, you're so right. And I think I said this recently, that you know, when you live in a big city, not even a big city, but when you follow national politics, it's what do I believe? What group do I fit into? Oh, I don't agree with that because I'm over here. But living in a small town the last 10 years, what I like about it is the problems are very local and they're not really partisan. It's, hey, we need money for a new stadium or we need money to keep the pool open, and people pitch in and get it done. It doesn't matter what their background is from. And I feel like that connects us, just like, in a sense, it's probably a bad analogy, but kind of similar to comedy. You know, we laugh at the same stuff. You're right. It doesn't matter who we vote for.
We're talking with Pete Schwabe. He is the host of Nightlight every evening from 8 until 10 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Pete, talk to us a little bit about this show, Nightlight, how you came to kind of put it together and to talk to the Civic Media higher-ups, and how this all came to be.
Well, this is probably the one radio show I'm qualified to host because I've had such an eclectic resume with writing and hosting and acting and all that kind of stand-up and all that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to find my groove, so to speak, you know, and I last week was my first week. I had some great guests on. We talk about, like, my friend Bill Leff was on. He hosts a national morning show called Tune In with Me on the MeTV network. Mm-hmm. But then we also had Frank Anderson, who's a Fox Valley, the biggest fan of Wisconsin ever. He's got a website called Wisconsinology, and he came on to tell some Christmas ghost stories about Wisconsin, you know. So I talked to Rob Thomas from Madison and Matt Miller, film critics. I love knowing what people are watching, and I'm hoping that my show can be like a discussion place for what we're all watching. Because if you're like me, you can spend 30 or 45 minutes looking for something to watch before you actually pick something. So I love those discussions. I love talking about comedy. I've got, you know, some actor friends of mine, like Lance Barber, the guy who plays young Sheldon's dad. He'll be on the show in the next week or so. Yeah, my buddy Rob Cohen is another guy. He's a writer for The Simpsons, and they based the Milhouse character on him.
Yeah.
And he's a one share owner in the Packers. So I love finding people like that are just, you know, interesting to talk to. They've had interesting experiences, and I'm really trying to familiarize myself with everything local in Wisconsin when it comes to the arts, theater companies, events, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of been my homework the last month. But we've had some really fun guests, and yeah, I hope to keep it going.
Well, is there anybody in either radio or television that you kind of, like, I don't want to say modeled the show after, but you looked at it and you said, wow, I like that particular thing about that show, or I like that host style. I want to try to incorporate or emulate parts of that in this show.
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I think, when it comes to late night, I always love David Letterman. Mm. Now there's so many hosts on, it's hard to keep up. Like, I can't, I've seen bits of Kimmel, bits of, Conan and all these guys, but it's, Letterman was sort of my hero. But I wouldn't say, just because my show is local and we look for local things in Wisconsin too, and the showbiz, I don't know that it is, you know, you take remnants from different shows.
Yeah.
But I love the late night, and I'm hoping to do some variety. I had an opera singer in on Friday.
Wow.
Who was a friend of mine, and he sang Danny Boy in the studio. So
how cool is that?
Yeah, it was really, really amazing. And he was really fun to talk to. I'm very interested in people's paths, where they go and what led them there. And just talking to people who are passionate about things that they love and follow in the arts and that kind of stuff. So
I'd be lying if I said I listened to every second of all the shows in the first week. I listened to parts of it. I was really impressed and happy to be on. One of the things I like about your hosting style, Pete, we're talking with Pete Schwabe, host of Nightlight on Civic Media from 8 until 10 every weeknight. One of the things, you're a great conversationalist. And I think that you also appreciate the art of storytelling. And I think that the more conversations we can have, I just think that is interesting to the audience, but I think you learn something. And you don't have to talk about news, right, to learn something.
Correct. And you know what? I'm a fan of your show, Todd, and I'm someone, I feel like you can learn a little bit of something from everybody. Mm. And especially while I'm getting my feet wet here and getting the show up off the ground, it's that's a big part of it to me. I'm truly fascinated by people's stories and you know, how they got to where they are, what their background is. Like the opera singer was a guy who was 5 or 6 years older than me from Northeast Wisconsin, gave me guitar lessons for a summer. I didn't know him that well. Well, he ends up being this nationally touring artist, and he happened to be in town, so he came into the studio, and you know, that fascinates me. There's people out there that know a lot more about opera than me, but I found it really interesting. And that's the kind of discussion I hope to bring to the show every night, really.
Well, I think that you nailed it. It's just being fascinated by people. You know, Barbara Streisand always had, you know, the most fascinating people of 1994. You know what? It wasn't the most popular. It wasn't the best. It was the most fascinating. Right. And I thought that was a great name for a show, to your point, because whether you agree with them politically or maybe they've had a salacious personal life, but they're fascinating people. Everybody has a story, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. And that goes back when I was a stand-up in my early 20s. You know, I thought I was pretty hot stuff. And, you know, there was a comedy boom. So I probably started getting work way before I had earned it, you know, and I'm like, God, everyone you're talking to in this audience has a story. Like, for me to insult someone, well, who am I to do? Like, this guy might have pulled someone out of a foxhole in a war.
Right.
This guy might have, you know, takes care of his mother all day and he's just out to have a laugh. Like, I don't think you can prejudge people or lump them into categories because everybody has a unique experience.
Yeah. So I totally can you stick around for one more segment here after the break?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. We'll do a little business here. And when we come back, I want to talk to Pete a little bit about maybe some of the things that you have planned, maybe some of the goals. I mean, occasionally Mr. Zomers and I have goals for this show. It doesn't always pan out, but occasionally you got to at least, you know, try to aim high once in a while. So we'll talk about.
I think you're doing okay.
Well, thank you. Some of the things that might be coming up on Nightlight with Pete Swaba in the days and weeks ahead. Again, every evening from 8 until 10 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. The Todd Allball Show rolls on with Pete Swaba, with Aaron Zomers, and with you. Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 before the hour of 2 o'clock. At the top of the hour, our friend and colleague Matt Flynn takes over these airwaves. Matt Flynn direct every afternoon, Monday through Friday, from 2 until 4. History being made every minute of every day. As Matt Flynn likes to remind us, he will take us to the front lines of history today on Matt Flynn direct from 2 until 4, immediately following this program. Right now, we're talking with another friend and colleague. He is Pete Swaba, and he is the host of Nightlight right here on Civic Media from 8 until 10 each and every weeknight. Pete, thanks so much for sticking around for one more segment here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's great.
Sure. My pleasure. Our pleasure as well.
I have a question as well, though, if I can ask.
Please.
So I know you mentioned you and Todd both share a curiosity about people, a genuine, like, desire to get to know where people have come from and fascination with that. And I'm fascinated to find out how you ended up making a movie because people wind up there through different paths.
Yeah, that's really, it's weird. You know what? It's interesting. I mean, I always kind of wanted to do stand up when I was a kid, but I always thought like I loved what Albert Brooks did. And I thought, oh, if I could ever make my own movie, I never thought I would do it. But then, you know, I got lucky and sold a script to MGM after I moved to LA, and my writing partner, Greg Gliana, who was on my show last week, sometime writing partner, he created the Meet the Parents franchise.
Oh, wow.
And he did it by shooting like a little $30,000 independent film in Chicago, financed by the comedian Emo Phillips. And Steven Soderbergh, the director, saw it. It was very dark, very funny, in my opinion, funnier than the studio version. But, so he did that. He went through the process and I would pick his brain when we were writing. And when A Guy Thing came out from MGM, I was kind of bummed out because, you know, they pay you pretty well for the script, but then they kind of tell you to go away. Mm-hmm. So it's taken out of the writer's hands. And I thought, well, I want to do this. I want to have the same experience that Greg did. And he was a good mentor for that. And so with The Godfather of Green Bay, I got to write it, direct it. I raised the money, which was the least fun part of the whole thing, but I also played the lead actor, mostly because we couldn't afford Ben Stiller or John Cusack or whoever. You
know. Now, don't sell yourself short, Pete. Come on, you know, you're fine.
Listen, I thought I did okay, but yeah, it helps. Name recognition is very important. But you know, so I got to go through the whole process, and I brought a whole movie crew up to the Marinette Menominee area. And then we shot in Vegas and LA a little bit too. And it was really fun. It was like a great process to go through. It became like a little cult hit. Tom Hanks' company loved it. They helped us get it out there and helped us get some buyers and that kind of stuff. So it was a great experience, but that's kind of what got me there, Aaron. It's just like wanting to go through the process and be more involved. And I think with comedy especially, I had a producer once tell me, you know, comedians or writers shouldn't direct their own stuff. And I could not disagree more. Most of the successful comedies are, you know, the Farrelly brothers, they write and direct, Harold Ramis, Woody Allen, you know, whomever. They're, it's to protect your vision. You direct it to protect what you write, in my opinion.
No, I think it's great. And I love the fact that you have this diverse background. And I think that's what, you know, I tell people I have a mutt resume when it comes to politics and other jobs and things like that. I think that you have a really diverse background when it comes to entertainment. You've been a writer, you've been an actor, you're a host, you're a stand-up. And I bet you also had just kind of a lot of, you know, run-of-the-mill, for lack of a better term, jobs on the way to that.
I did. I mean, I like I said before, I got lucky when I was like 22, there was a stand-up boom and they didn't have enough comics to work the clubs. So mm-hmm. I started working right away, probably before I was ready to, but you know, whatever, it worked out. Yeah. But before that, I worked at the Chicago Board of Trade as a runner to help pay the bills.
That's and great.
It was interesting. When I was in college, I was the city of Marinette up here in northeast Wisconsin put me on a garbage truck for a summer. Nice. That was interesting.
Yeah.
I worked in a factory for a summer and it's just a lot of stuff. And those experiences kind of mold you and they help you figure out who you are and expose you to a whole different part of life and how people live. So yeah, they were lucky, but I've been lucky too. I mean, I've been able to make my living in show business for the past 30 years and somehow by the grace of God, I've been able to survive doing it, but I've had a lot of different avenues in it, mostly probably because of my short attention span, or if I get passionate about something, I just try to do it, you know.
Anything coming up here in the next few days or weeks ahead? Any big plans, kind of where you want to go at the show? Again, it's Nightlight with Pete Swaba every evening from 8 until 10 right here across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. So what's ahead for Nightlight with Pete Swaba?
So, okay, tomorrow night I've got, for those of you who are fans of the film Office Space, with Ron Livingston, the Mike Judge film, I've got one of the Bobs coming on the show. Nice. Wisconsin actor extraordinaire Richard Reilly will be with me tomorrow night.
Nice.
He's done over 300 films. He's a Wisconsin guy. He's got great stories about growing up in Wisconsin, and I interviewed him on TV once too. He's just a solid guy all the way around, but he'll be on tomorrow night. And then Wednesday night right now, I've got Steve Burrows, who's a Wisconsin filmmaker, coming on. He made a film called Chump Change that he shot in his hometown of Milwaukee a number of years ago. And an award-winning HBO documentary he just did called Bleed Out, where he sort of cataloged his mother's struggles with a terminal illness. So he's a great commercial director too. He's kind of a can do it all. So that's Steve Burrows. He'll be on Wednesday night. And then just a revolving door of interesting people, critics, actors, producers, Wisconsin filmmakers, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's a different adventure every night.
Well, I think I can't wait to listen to more of this. It's a great program. We're really fortunate to have you part of Civic Media. And I just appreciate your background and the approach you're taking to the show, because it's something different every night. It's going to make you laugh. It's going to make you think. And by golly, you're going to learn something along the way as well. So I think it's great.
I don't know if I go that far, but
Well, I have.
Yeah, come on again, Todd. I'd love to have you. It was really fun talking to you on the air. Well, so I really appreciate this.
Too. I tell you, I'm like Regis Philbin. I have really no life at night, and I'll never say no. And unless, you know, maybe the rare occasion, but, you know, I'll usually say yes. So, you know, I'm the Tony Randall and Regis Philbin of your show. Whenever you get a hold of Phil, just let me know. I'll pop on.
I'll tell you what, that's a category I do not have that covered, the Tony Randall Regis Philbin.
And again, not that I'm that talented, it's just that I have nothing to do. So
I love it. I love the cross association.
Well, it's a great program. Again, Nightlight with Pete Swaba every night from 8 until 10. Pete, thank you so much. Have a great day. Have a great show tonight.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it.
Thanks, our pleasure. Stay tuned next. Our friend and colleague Matt Flynn is up with Matt Flynn Direct, the latest in news. He will have it for you. We will see you tomorrow. Go Pack, go tonight, and keep Pete Swaba on in the background. For Aaron Zommers, I'm Todd Alboe. Thanks to all of our guests as well. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, do not give up. Keep banging on your drum.
Keep banging on and your day.